Every year in the lead up to Christmas, I like to watch some classic Christmas films. It is my way of igniting the Christmas spirit, and since I now live in the Southern Hemisphere, it is also my way of connecting with the cold and wintry Christmases I grew up enjoying. But this year, I decided to consider if there were any urgent care educational pearls I could find within these films, and use them as a springboard for a CPD conversation with some urgent care colleagues. So to start this series of Christmas podcasts off on this Christmas Eve, I'm going to a Christmas classic that has been etched in my mind since it was released. A family favourite, this film was a fixture in our household growing up, and the theme song never fails to evoke the magic of being a child at Christmas. I'm talking here about the 1982 animated film The Snowman, which was based on the book by Raymond Briggs. It tells the story of a young boy who builds a snowman that comes alive one night and leads the boy on an adventure all the way to the North Pole. It's only 26 minutes long and features no dialogue, but it does feature the stunning anthem Walking in the Air, which would be made famous 3 years later by a young Welsh singer called Aled Jones. If you've never seen it, I would encourage you to check it out. But you should be warned, for a children's story, it does have an emotional ending. I think I always related to this story as it features a little ginger boy, and my sister had a huge snowman toy based on the film. It was nominated for an Oscar in 1983, and for the American version, it featured an introduction by none other than David Bowie. Anyway, what could this magical tale possibly teach us about urgent care? Well, there is a scene in which the snowman rides a motorbike, and in the process gets a little too close to the exhaust pipe with his legs. So I thought I would call our Director of Clinical Training and a person with an interest in burns, Dr. David Sorrell, to chat about Christmas, urgent care, and exhaust burns in snow people.
Hello, David Sorrell here.
Dave, it's Guy Melrose here. How are you?
I'm good. How are yourself?
Not so bad. It's that time of year again. It's Christmas, as I'm sure you're very aware. And I've just been thinking about Christmas and particularly about working around Christmas time and all the differences in urgent care at Christmas. So I was wondering if you had any thoughts around Christmas in urgent care. What when you get your roster and you find out that you're working on Christmas Day, what are your thoughts when you get that roster?
Yeah, it's always very interesting. Certainly had a few Christmases in the emergency department. I've been lucky enough to have a lot of Christmas Eve and Christmas days off over the year to be with my families. But whenever I have been at work, it's sort of a mixed feeling because it's great to be with the team at work and everyone is always extremely cheerful and the patients usually apologise for coming in on Christmas, which is always very nice of them. So it's always been a great experience at work, but it's you always when you've got a family, you're always missing the family. Even more this year, where I haven't seen my two of my sons and their wives for 2 years. We usually would meet up once a year, but they're overseas in the UK and in Denmark. So it's going to be a very small Christmas for me this year.
And it's interesting, isn't it, that when you do get rostered on at Christmas, they do, most places try and give you Christmas on and then New Year off or try and balance things. But when you do get rostered on, it does feel, or at least in my experience, whether it's in ED or urgent care, it feels like everyone's made a little bit more effort because of the day. As you say, the patients are a little bit more apologetic for coming in, that they're full of Christmas spirit and they want to get back to their families, and people bring in food and chocolates and there's a nice sort of atmosphere, at least that the serious work goes on, but it does at least feel like everyone's a little bit happier at work on those days. Did you find the same?
Yes, and the main sort of thing that you get is the parents testing out their children's Christmas presents disasters, like especially the hoverboards when they came in, and the scooters, and certainly people who would be using children's gifts that they really shouldn't be using is one of the, and it's always pretty humorous when it does come in, because the patients are obviously fairly embarrassed for what's happened to them as well.
Yeah, it is funny, isn't it, when an uncle comes in because they decided to get on the skateboard or the new bike or whatever it is. And yeah, there is that influx of after lunch injuries and Christmas present related problems. And yeah, those occasionally have a bit of a twinge of maybe food and alcohol related as well into the mix. But I generally find people are quite friendly at Christmas, whereas other holidays, like particularly New Year and other kind of public holidays, people don't tend to have the same spirit. It's definitely a different public holiday to work on. Do you find that?
Yes, it's definitely far too much of a different kind of spirit on New Year's Day and New Year's Eve.
And you mentioned your son's overseas. Is for Christmas for you, being a Kiwi, it's obviously a warm Christmas. So, do you what's a typical Christmas summed up for you as a Kiwi Christmas? What differentiates it to maybe a Northern Hemisphere Christmas?
Well, for me, it's actually two Christmases. So traditionally, Christmas Eve is a Dutch Christmas, and specifically a Southern Dutch Brabant Christmas, where the Dutch side of the family, my wife's family, get together and we spend all day baking. And then we consume in the evening the Christmas baking goods. It's supposed to be a post-midnight mass, Catholic mass ceremony, but for us, when we had children, we had to kind of abandon that, because there's no way you can look after three small children if you've been feasting at midnight and when the kids, because the kids will not sleep it. And then that's the Dutch side. And then the English side has always been a traditional English lunch with my mum, the English family. So the same sorts of foods, I guess, that you'd have in an English Christmas, with turkey, ham, and steamed Christmas pudding. But also in a hot environment. So, of course, it's you always get the afternoon very much sleepiness. And that's our Christmas. So it's spread over 2 days. Sometimes it's had to move forwards and backwards because of work commitments. And yeah, we're moving forward, I think, to the 19th of December for the Dutch Christmas this year, because of all these complicated shifts of family members and things. But I'm sure it will be very much the same.
So you essentially have two Northern Hemisphere themed Christmases, kind of traditionally, if you like, but based in the Southern Hemisphere.
Yeah, it's a reasonably common Christmas Day, Pākehā, Northern Hemisphere Christmas. And then the Dutch one, which is based on traditions that are quite different to my own, and also they actually do celebrate in Holland the 5th and 6th of December as Santa Claus, but excuse my pronunciation. But we never really celebrated that day ourselves. It was always the sort of 24th of December.
And have you been in the Northern Hemisphere for a Christmas at all? Have you had a cold, wintry, snowy, bleak, dark Christmas in the Northern Hemisphere? Or have you always had hot Christmases in your life?
Always had hot Christmases. We did spend 1 year when I worked in South Island at the Catlins, which was quite different to Auckland, especially the very cool sea temperatures. But I've never had a Northern Hemisphere Christmas. We were hoping to possibly have one this year or last year, but things have become somewhat more difficult. So we're expecting our Northern Hemisphere children to come back down next year.
And one of the things I love about Christmas, and well, in general, I love films, but at Christmas I do enjoy watching certain films again and again. Do you have any Christmas films that you kind of epitomise Christmas for you, that you'll put on and enjoy and bring the mood, the Christmas mood, into your house?
Yes, our family Christmas movie is Love Actually, which is pretty much watched every single year. We've got it on DVD, but I think that's down at the beach, actually, since we've moved to more of a streaming service. But hopefully someone will play it on one of the channels, or it's on one of the streaming services. So we've watched that many of the years.
It is a good film. I first saw that in the cinema in Prague, which was kind of strange because we went there just before Christmas to the Christmas markets, and so it was cold and snowy and it felt all very, very kind of Christmassy. And we went in to watch the film, and it had obviously English words but Czech subtitles. But there's a scene in the film with Colin Firth and an Italian girlfriend, and they didn't dub that into English because obviously it was for a Czech audience. So there was this whole portion of the film I had no idea what was going on until I had to watch it later on DVD. But there's so many little threads in that film, isn't there? Which is your favourite? There's obviously Hugh Grant as the Prime Minister, and you've got the whole Emma Thompson and Alan Rickman relationship thing, and the guy, the English guy who goes off to America to meet Americans, and which do you have a favourite kind of sub story within the whole overarching thing?
Yeah, I certainly do love them all, but I certainly you know, there's certain lines that stick in your head, like when the little girl is playing the second lobster, and in the nativity play, and Emma Thompson says, there's more than one lobster at Jesus' birth. And that's a good line. And there seems to be some that you obviously slip into conversations, like just in cases is a sort of word that I often pop in, that just pops into my head from the movie.
And I always enjoyed watching Hugh Grant dancing when he thinks no one's watching. And you just to imagine, yes, a prime minister behind closed doors, just letting their hair down and then being a bit human. It's probably something we don't see in prime ministers an awful lot. But I think it's a really fun film. It's not perfect, is it? But it's, you forgive the imperfections because it's a Christmas film and it just makes you feel Christmassy. And for me, one of my films that make me think of Christmas is The Snowman, which is an animated hand-drawn cartoon that was released in the 80s, based on a book by Raymond Briggs. And growing up, it was something my father put on every Christmas. And I remember the Alid Jones was the number one in the charts with the song Walking in the Air, which he's now 50 something, I think, now, Alid Jones, but he was this little angel with this angelic voice singing this wonderful soundtrack. And I watched it again recently and actually thought of you, Dave, because there's a scene in it when the snowman hops on a motorbike, and when he gets off, the inside of his legs are burning. And so what they do is they hop into the shed and get into the freezer, and he kind of treats the burns that way, which is obviously slightly different in snowman anatomy. But in humans, exhaust burns are something that we might see at Christmas, particularly if people have gone out and bought their kids these little pit bikes, or they've got a new trail bike and are playing with it on Christmas Day. They might go and get a hot exhaust burn to the leg. And talking with you about that, it's actually, they can be quite difficult little burns. So if we can take a little bit of urgent care learning from this conversation based on The Snowman, exhaust burns, what are your sort of thoughts and approaches to those?
Well, my thoughts are, first of all, it was very good to see both the snowman and his passenger were wearing helmets.
I thought but that too. I definitely, that was a, and I thought, God, in the 80s, they were that was very progressive of them.
No other protective gear, though. And it is important to protect. Basically, when I did my basic handling skills test on a bike, they said that you should have no skin exposed, and the exhaust burns, there's an important element of that. And the article that I found of characteristics and analysis of exhaust pipe contact burns was very interesting, because they found that the burns, although small, so the size of the burns ranged from 0.5% to 3.14% total body surface area. So those are very small burns, but 61% of them had a third degree burn element, and 35% of them required surgery. So there were 38 people that required surgery, which was actually 59 surgeries. So over a third of the patients required surgery for these injuries. And if you can imagine the typical burns that you would see, that would be between half and 3%, almost none of them would really be rushing off and having grafting. So the lesson learned is, one, protective gear, especially on the legs, can protect you getting deep burns. And so they should be all wearing protective gear. I know I have mainly Kevlar jeans, which are nothing like normal jeans. They're rated 11 seconds on the tarmac if you actually fell over. And also that when you, as a doctor, see patients with muffler burns, think, oh, these are most likely to be quite serious.
And I think my understanding of why they're probably a bit worse is that sometimes people burn themselves because the bike has fallen on them, and so their leg is trapped, and so there's been a sustained burn. Yes. Rather than you touching a hot plate and removing your hand quickly, you've had this kind of searing of your leg and a more sustained burning. But the other reason might be that because a bike is designed to take you out into the wide open, you're not probably going to be that near anything first aid to get the burn cooled. And whenever you've given any talk at boot camp or Goodfellow in the past, you've always talked about the importance of cooling the burn down. And so when you burn yourself in the kitchen on the hot plate, you can immediately go to the tap. But if you're out and about, these burns are probably not getting that initial cooling to stop the burn, so it keeps burning deeper and into those layers. Would you say that's a one of the contributing factors?
That's definitely a fairly good explanation. And obviously, unlike the snowman, you don't really want to put ice on it. You want cool running water within 4 hours for 20 minutes. And that's the best. So even though the snowman was cooling his burns, he wasn't cooling them correctly.
Mm. Yeah, I'm not sure if we're qualified to talk about snowman anatomy and physiology, but yeah, the cold, you favour cold running water for our human listeners. And how long do you generally recommend somebody has had a, and let's say if it's happened out on their property and they've burnt themselves and they've come into an urgent care and it's maybe 20 minutes that they've taken to get in, and in that time they've not really had anything on, how long do you then cool that burn for?
So When I'm seeing any burn patient, I ask, you know, when was your burn? And if the burn is less than 4 hours old, then I would put it under cool running water for 20 minutes. And it doesn't have to be cold. That's the other thing. There's quite a decent range of temperatures that can be used. And it's the actual fact of the water running across. And obviously, we are usually based at 37 degrees Celsius. And if your water is 15 degrees Celsius, which is not particularly cold, you've got a difference of temperature that can remove the potential energy from the burn and therefore treat and remove the depth of the burn in some circumstances.
And because of this study, we need to be more cautious for deeper burns. Do you find it easy to tell the depth on day one, or is this something you find takes a few days to reveal itself?
Yeah, no, it is very difficult to be certain of the depth of the burn on day one. And so I guess if the next exhaust burn that you're coming across, you'd be thinking, gosh, there's almost certainly some full thickness burn there. Can they feel it? Is it perfusing? And I guess more than half the time, it might be worth discussing it with your local service to consider to review it. And it might be that review is straight away, or it might be in a few days. And with all burns, it takes up to 72 hours to sort of get a good grip on things, but it can even take 2 weeks to work out what is fully full thickness.
And then any other tips? Christmas time burns, obviously tetanus is an important
yeah,
thing.
Tetanus is always important, probably not for the more the just scalds, not as important. But, you know, as we say, DEFT, don't ever forget tetanus.
Mm. And these exhaust burns are generally going to be on the lower leg, I guess. Do you ever see them on the hands from people trying to repair or move a bike or touching the wrong bits? Have you ever had an exhaust burn on?
Occasionally, you get the fingertips. It's much less likely they're going to get their hand trapped under there, but of course they might be trying to extract themselves. When they got the burn on hand, and it's interesting. The most interesting thing about that study was that 59% of them were males with a mean age of 30. I would have thought the higher percentage being males than just 59%.
And so what you've mentioned so far, the importance is obviously in prevention. So it's wearing the right gear when you get on your bike. So for people who've just got a bike for Christmas, going out in your shorts, we've mentioned New Zealand's nice and warm over Christmas. So it's you don't just go out and hop on the bike in your shorts and go and race around the paddock on Christmas Day with bare legs. So you definitely need to be wearing the right gear. And that goes too for the rider when they're riding two abreast. I forget the name for that. There's a term when you're...
Pillion.
So the...
Or sometimes they call them two up. So when your second person's riding, they must wear all the same protective gear. So helmet, jacket, gloves, pants, boots, covering the ankle. So most proper motorcycle boots do cover the ankle. And obviously, sometimes they're quite awkward to get on and off. I've got a pair of lace-ups that now have an inside zip as well, so it makes it very easy to get them on and off. And I have a summer jacket now, which is, I think it's a Revit product, but it's really good. It's made from a reinforced mesh, so that it actually cools you as you travel along, but it is very abrasion resistant.
And then just finally, is there any role for antibiotics in burn management in the initial phase?
Certainly not in burns that present within 24 hours unless they are extremely heavily contaminated. So burns start off with being sterile, and it's usually those delayed presentations, you know, 3, 4, even 5 days down the track where they're all scabbed up and infested with golden staph. But routine antibiotics are not required for most burns. And unless there's a large percentage, I guess, and that would you'd have a discussion with someone about that. But we do see a lot of burns that present quite delayed and at that infected time where they need antibiotics and dressings to sort of kind of autolytically debride them or even active debridement sometimes. And that's a very painful process.
So thank you, Dave. This conversation, we've covered Christmases in Northern and Southern Hemisphere. Talked a little bit about how Christmas feels when you're working in urgent care. I hope everybody who's working this Christmas, yourself included, have pleasant shifts, and particularly with COVID around in New Zealand this Christmas. And we will catch up with you again in the new year, Dave, to talk about other clinical issues on the podcast. But in terms of in the burns relating to exhausts and prevention, plenty of cooling, particularly if they haven't had the first aid treatment, and nice running water, doesn't have to be too cold. Avoid the ice, don't do what the ice, what the snowman did, but definitely do wear a helmet and other protective gear. And hopefully everyone listening has a good Christmas. So I'll let you get on with your busy life, Dave, but thank you, and we'll catch you in the new year.
Merry Christmas to you.